So let's imagine you're on an airplane. You're coming in to your airport. You're about to land, and you notice looking out the passenger window that there's a storm coming in. Well, the storm is just far enough off that it's not quite where you're at, but you're concerned, what are they going to do? And you consider, well, this pilot obviously has the most information. He has been trained. The tower is telling him how far this is away, and that's what will make the decision whether we fly around the storm for a while or we go ahead and land. Well, when pilots are landing a plane, they do get information from the tower. But with a storm within 5 nautical miles will determine whether you're going to land a plane or not. But the problem is when pilots get that close to an airport, they want to land the plane. The airlines want them to land the plane. Delays are huge troublemakers. So when pilots see the, as they say, see the barn, they want to get the horse in the barn. It's like a horse that's going, and as soon as it can see it, it takes off running to get there. And that's the way pilots are. So researchers were curious to see what it would be take for a pilot to decide not to land. The situation is called a go or no go. Basically, you have a certain amount of time, whether the wind isn't picked up too much, or the storm isn't too close, or the fog isn't too dense, or maybe it's coming out, to when a pilot can make the decision of, it's safe to land, or I need to no-go and go to another airport or fly around in a holding pattern until conditions clear up. And for the most part, the pilots are responsible for that decision. The tower will give them the information, but it's the pilots who have to make the ultimate call. So researchers began to look at what pilots did when they came into the Atlanta-Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport. What made them determine whether they were going to go or not go? What they found out was it had nothing to do with the weather. It had nothing to do with guidelines. In other words, if they had more strict guidelines or less strict guidelines, that didn't seem to make any difference. In fact, nothing really seemed to make a difference except for one thing. If the plane in front of you landed, then you were going to land. If the plane in front of you decided it was unsafe, then all the rest of the planes would do so as well. In other words, it had nothing to do with training. It had nothing to do with the radar. It had everything to do with what the other guy was doing. Makes you a little nervous next time you're in the airport to know that your pilot's decision isn't affected by anything other than the crowd he surrounds himself with. What was funny about this is they thought, well, maybe it's just some pilots are daredevils, and then once one person does it, it's kind of that whole thing of, you know, your friends are doing it, you always do that. But what they found is it worked either way. Takeoff, landing, whether it was stop or go, until someone broke the cycle, everyone would do it. And once one person would break the cycle, then no one else would do it. What is it with that strange inertia? Some people would say it's because human beings are just herd animals, that we evolved to follow what everybody else was doing in order to be safe. But we're different, right? We have a brain. We can think. So why is it that we have the tendency to just follow what everybody else is doing? Jesus said in Matthew chapter 7, verses 13 through 14, "Enter through the narrow gate. For the gate is wide and the way is broad that leads to destruction. And there are many who enter through it. For the gate is small and the way is narrow that leads to life. And there are few that find it." You see, Jesus knew and understand that for most people, they're just going to do what everybody else is doing. The way that's broad, the way of the crowd, is the way that many people think is the right way. The Old Testament talks about this in Exodus chapter 23, verse 2. when the old law commanded the Israelites, you shall not follow the masses in doing evil. You should not testify in a dispute so to turn aside after the multitude in order to pervert justice. What's he talking about here? He's talking about someone who does something because, well, that's what everybody else is doing. I was just following orders. I was just following the crowd. I knew it was wrong. But yet, we follow the multitude. And what's right goes out the window. You see, there is a dangerous tendency that human beings have of following the crowd. So much so that when Solomon Ashe, who is a researcher, wanted to find out why people in World War II were so willing to commit atrocities, why there were people who were willing to execute their fellow citizens because someone in authority told them to. So he did a study. And in Solomon Ashe's study, he would take people to do a little geometry test. Basically, they would set up a test where you would have a series of lines marked A, B, and C. And then you would be given another line, and you were to tell whether that line was shorter or longer than every other line. Now, you would be in a room with 5 or 6 other people, sometimes as few as 3, sometimes as many as 20 or 25. And you would all be giving your answers out loud. So basically, it was a visual test. Can you see if something's longer than the other? A test that kindergartners could figure out. But what the people in the test didn't know is that everybody in that room was in on it. So all the other people that were sitting there taking the test with you were in on it. And every so often, they would, as a crowd, begin to say, they would look at the line and they would say, is X the same length as A? And they would all say, yes, it is. And then they would come to you and they would say, what's your answer? What did people do? You obviously knew it wasn't correct, but everybody else thought it was. What Solomon Ashe's study found was that 25% of the participants would not conform. If everybody else was saying it was this length, they wouldn't agree to it. But 75% would do it at least once. Now 5%, they did it every time. They didn't trust their own judgment in the least bit. They would just go along with what the crowd said. But for the majority of the people, they wouldn't conform every time. But they would conform some of the time. What Ashe found was what we're talking about tonight. The draw of the crowd. The tendency that we have to let the crowd hold us back from doing what is right and what is good. Tonight I want us to consider some ways that we can resist the draw of the crowd. Because folks, the crowd that's against the truth is only getting bigger. We had a time in our existence that we might have said that there was a majority that believed in certain principles that we could stand with. But that's not always been the case, and it will not always continue to be the case. So we need to be very careful to heed Jesus' words and learn how to resist the draw of the crowd. So how can we learn to resist? Number one, we need to learn to resist the easy. What did Jesus say in Matthew chapter 7? What is the way that leads to destruction? It's broad. There are many that go through it. You know, some translations translate that as easy. Easy. The word in the original language is empty, open, versus hard and tight. It's the idea of you were looking through a gate that you would be going through that shepherds would use. Is it one that is narrow that you have to force them through there? Is it something that everybody can walk through at the same time? It's the easy path. To follow the crowd is just to go along with everyone else. And sometimes to change that is very difficult. It's hard to resist the draw of the crowd. That's why we need to be careful and realize that doing what is right isn't always going to be what is easy. It may cause us trouble. Acts chapter 14, verse 22 says that through many tribulations, we must enter the kingdom of God. As Paul is speaking to those Christians there, he's trying to encourage them to continue in the faith. And what does he tell them? If you're going to stay in the faith, you need to realize that it's going to be tough. That to enter into the kingdom of God, to be what he wants us to be made perfect as his people, it's going to take a little bit of hurt. There are times it's going to make us uncomfortable. It's going to make it more difficult. You see, human beings have a tendency to fall into the easy. Researchers that have studied habit formation, and they've studied how we can get people to do certain things, they have found one simple principle that seems to work every time. How do you make a person do something? You make it the default. If you want to make organ donation go up, instead of having people have to go and choose to be an organ donor, you just say, we're going to make you an organ donor, and if you don't want to do it, you have to let us know. Most people won't bother to do it. If you want people to select something or to follow something, you just make it the default, right? Because we'll just go along with the path. And we like to think, no, I make a reasoned decision, and no, I think about things. But the truth of the matter is, if we just make it simple enough, well, that's what people do. Advertisers know this. Marketers know this. That's the reason they put the certain things at the end of the aisle, because it's easier. They know that we won't take the effort to do what is hard. And following the crowd can be easy. And if we're not ready to do something more difficult, we may fall into the trap of just following what everyone else is doing. Because to resist the draw of the crowd, we have to think about it. We have to acknowledge what's going on. Because so many times we follow the crowd without even thinking of it. Have you ever done that? Have you ever walked into a place and saw a bunch of people standing there and you just thought, well, I'm going to get in this line? And you stand there for a ways and then somebody walks in past you and you realize that's not a line. Some people were just standing there. Wow, well, that's what everybody was doing. You didn't think about it, right? But if we're going to resist the draw of a crowd, we need to recognize when it's there. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, thinking is the hardest work in the world. That's why so few of us do it. You see, most of those pilots, they didn't think about it. They just followed along. Most people do the same thing. They don't think about why they believe what they believe. They just follow along. They don't take the time to examine things and say, is this the way it should be? They just say, well, that's what everybody else is doing. We follow the crowd. That's why in Luke chapter 13 and verses 23 through 27, some were saying to Jesus, Lord, are there just a few that are being saved? If the crowd, the majority, is going in the wrong direction, does that mean just a few are being saved? And Jesus once again tells them to enter through that narrow door. He said, once the head of the household, he said, enter through the narrow door, for many will seek to enter and will not enter it. Once the head of the house begins to get up and shuts the door, you will begin to stand outside and knock and say, Lord, open the door for us. But he will not answer and say to you, I do not know where you are from. And they will begin to say, we ate and drank in your presence. We taught in your streets. And he will say, I tell you, you do not know me. You don't know where you are from. Depart from me, you evildoers. See, there's being a part, there's being a part of. Unfortunately, for many people, they think being there is just enough. But being there doesn't necessarily mean you're a part of it. All these people said, we were there, we ate and drank with you, we did these things. But he said, but when the time came, you weren't there. And now you're desperate to get in. But because you didn't take that narrow path, because you didn't think things through, now you're going to find yourself in destruction. In Matthew chapter 7, 21, as we talked about last night, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Nobody can accidentally find heaven. But there will be lots of people who stumble into hell without realizing it. That's why we need to think. Researchers were determining with medical doctors what causes medical mistakes in surgery. How can things happen? And so they were training surgeons. And basically it was a practice scenario. The person they were operating on wasn't real, but the conditions were. And what they found was if they threw a curveball at these surgeons and something went wrong, more times than not what the surgeons would do is they would just keep moving forward. And they would keep repeating the same mistake. They wouldn't go back and check something. They would assume something had happened not. Maybe a gauge wasn't turned on or some medication hadn't been dispensed correctly or whatever. And that they found doctors over and over would just kind of run their heads into the wall. And what they had to train these doctors to do is they say, when you find yourself in these difficult situations, you have to stop and think. You have to stop and go back and say, wait a minute, why are we here? And more often times when they would do that, they would easily find the problem. But if they wouldn't do that, they would continue going down the same bad path until it was too late for the patient. Instead of stepping back and thinking, they would just continue down the path. Do we do that? Do we look and consider why we are where we are? Do we consider why we are doing the things that we're doing? Without stopping to think of what is drawing us there? See, that's how the crowd can make us conform. Because we just keep following in the same mistakes. That's why we need to think about what we do and why we do it. So we can recognize the pressure. You know, human beings we're bothered by outliers. When I go to Sam's anymore, they have an app. And it's the greatest thing they've ever come up with. You can go into Sam's, you can take out your phone, and when you go to buy something, you just scan it, and it's right there to pay for. And as soon as you're done, you just hit pay, and you slide the button, and you can just walk out the door. And they'll look at your receipt, and they'll send you on your way. And I have thought, there's been some great discoveries in this world, you know, movable type, space shuttles, but the Scan and Go app is my favorite thing in the world, because I don't have to stand in line. But it's funny, every time I use that and I go to Sam's and I'm coming out, you have to walk out where everybody else is checking out. And I just push my buggy full of stuff right past all those people. Just wave at them and say, sorry, I'm just walking out. And you know what happens every time? I have somebody that looks at me and just like, they're shocked. What does that guy think he's doing? We are all standing in line and he's just walking right past us out the door. Somebody stop that guy. Well, they let you do it. But why do people react that way? Because you're not doing what everyone else is doing. Outliers bother us. We want everyone to conform. Young people, you're going to find in your life that when you're doing something that's right, people that would never talk to you, would never care a thing about you, are going to get upset with you. And they're going to try to get you to do wrong. And you'll wonder, why do they care? Because the truth is, outliers bother people. And that's why the world puts pressure on those that don't conform to them. Peter says in 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 4, in all this they are surprised when you do not run with them in the same excess of dissipation, and they malign you. See, the world will say, well, we just want people to do what they want to do. But that's not true. Because when people aren't doing what they want to be doing, they're going to malign you. They're going to put pressure on you. They're going to attack you until you do what they're doing. So that's the problem we have with the crowd that surrounds ourselves, is that crowd can then put pressure on us. You want the best example of that? Think about Pilate. When Pilate is put in charge of Jesus, when this man falls into his jurisdiction and Pilate has to deal with this problem, Pilate he was the ultimate authority, right? What he said went. But he had known for years, and he had had problems with the Jews, and he knew that they were more trouble than they were worse. So when Jesus falls into his court, when he has to come to the decision, Pilate does everything he can to not have to make this decision. Let's send him over to Herod. Well, he's part of his jurisdiction. Well, Herod sends him back. He said, well, I'll whip him, I'll punish him, and we'll release him. And they say, no, that's not enough. And then he says, what about Barabbas? You can release this man or release Barabbas, because they won't choose Barabbas, because this man is a murderer. He's wanted for insurrection. Well, what do they say? Release for us Barabbas. But notice in Luke chapter 23, it says, but Pilate, wanting to release Jesus, addressed them again. What did Pilate want to do? He wanted to set Jesus free. Why? Because he knew he was innocent. Because he knew he had done nothing to deserve death. He had every reason to release him. But what happens? But they kept on calling out to him, saying, crucify him, crucify him. And he said to them a third time, what evil has this man done? I have no guilt into him. I will punish him and release him. But they were insistent. With loud voices, they were asking that he be crucified. And their voices began to prevail. How can you make a man like Pilate, who is in authority, in power, has no reason to do what they want you to do? They can't force him to do that. His decision is fine. He's the ruler. He knows he's innocent. So why does Pilate go ahead and do it? Because their voices began to prevail. It was the pressure of the crowd. Mark says it this way in Mark chapter 15 and verse 15. Wishing to satisfy the crowd, Pilate released Barabbas for them and had Jesus scourged and handed him over to be crucified. Why did Pilate do what he did? Because their voices began to prevail. Because he wanted to satisfy the crowd. Folks, we might be in the exact same situation that Pilate is. That people are demanding from us to give up Jesus, to conform to with what they want. And we know we shouldn't. We know it's not right. But the longer they chant, the more their voices began to prevail. Until eventually, we're more interested in satisfying the crowd than doing what's right. My father-in-law was a science teacher. He's here with us tonight, and he gave me an experiment that I use when I'm teaching kids. And what it basically is you take an aluminum can, you put a little bit of water in it, and you take that can and you put it over an open flame and begin to heat it up. And eventually the water that is in there will begin to boil, and you'll see the steam coming out. And all the air that is in there will start to, the molecules will start to move, and the pressure in that can will change. And if you take that can and immediately flip it upside down and place it in a bucket of cold water, you know what happens? That can will crush. It's a good demonstration, because as soon as that can goes, whoa, everybody looks at it and goes, whoa, what happened? Why does it do that? Well, it's not because that the air pressure has suddenly changed. You know, right now we are under air pressure. The weight of the air is pressing down on us. But right now, it's equal to what's in us. But when you put it under the fire, it changes what's in there. The pressure in that can changes. And then when you reintroduce it into that new environment, the air pressure in that can is no longer strong enough to resist the outside air pressure, and it crushes us. You see, the pressure on the outside isn't what gets us. It's what's on the inside. And the same is true for each of us. You see, the pressure of the world is always going to be there. But when we allow the heat to get to us, when we allow it to change us on the inside, that's when the world will come and crush us. That's why we need to recognize that pressure. And if need be, remove ourselves from the crowd. After Jesus fed the 5,000, the crowd was excited. I mean, think about this. This man could take 5 loaves and a few fish and feed us all. They were ready to make Jesus the king. They were ready to follow him, but notice after that in John chapter 6, verse 15, he says, "But Jesus, perceiving that they come to take him by force and to make him a king, withdrew to the mountains by himself alone." Why would Jesus leave? He had the crowd. He had the people there fawning over him. They were ready to make him king. But he leaves. Because that's not the way it was to be done. They couldn't make him a king. He was a king. They needed not to make him a king, but to submit to his kingship. But you know what? Sometimes the pressure that gets to us is, it's not the negative pressure, but the positive pressure. When people will say, "Well, we'll make you great. We'll reward you." You see, sometimes it's that pressure that causes us to buckle. And maybe that's when we need to remove ourselves from the crowd. Have you noticed in our world today the number of advertisements that are promoting agendas? How many companies are trying to sell you something, but at the same time they're trying to tell you how great they are for the environment, or how good they are in their issues relating to women, or how... whatever it is, whatever is the, you know, whatever the big goal is today, because companies, they want to be associated with that, right? They want you to think, well, these are good, you know, good people. That's why you'll get their stuff. But it's that idea of that if you want to be right, you got to do these things and act this way and think these things. But you know, sometimes that noise makes people think that that is the way things are. There's a story about a man who saw an advertisement for a frog farm. And he heard that there was a farm full of these big, nice bullfrogs. Now, I don't know why anybody wanted a pond full of frogs, but somebody did, and this guy went looking to it. And so when he got there, he took him out to that frog farm, and he sat there and he said, "Just listen to all those frogs." And all of a sudden he heard that chorus of bullfrogs just making their noise like he was. And the guy was so impressed that right then and there he didn't haggle with him. He gave him his money and he bought that pond. And he said, "I'm going to drain that pond and see how many frogs I have. I can take them to market. I'll be a rich man." And he drained that frog, and you know what he found out? There was just one old bullfrog. See, sometimes that's the way it is in life. Sometimes it seems like they're major problems, but often it's just a few old bullfrogs. See, that's the problem with the crowd. When we get in it, it sounds like it's overwhelming. But if we're willing to step outside, we can see it for what it really is. I'm afraid we have a bad habit of that. And folks, I'm not just talking about our young people. I'm talking about all of us. We get so used to hearing certain things. We surround ourselves with certain messages over and over again until we find it overwhelming, until we begin to be conformed. That's why we're told in 1 John chapter 2, verse 15, "Do not love the world or the things in this world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him." It's amazing to me to see how unbelievably controlled we can be by worldly things. What's happening in Washington? What's going on in culture? What some famous person says? Because we get so obsessed with the world, then we start listening to the world and conforming to the world. But if we love the world, we're not listening to God. Maybe we need to pull ourselves out of the crowd, out of the chorus of the frogs, so we can hear what God wants us to be. Because there's a very real danger of being drawn in by the crowd. What could be holding us back? What could be keeping us from Him? I told you the story about the pilots and how they kept following each one. What was interesting in that story, and you probably noticed, the reason they figured this out is because they said when one pilot said, "Nope," the rest of them did it as well. All it took was one person to stand up and make the decision. One person to stand up and say, it's safe or it's not safe. We can do this or we can't. And it could change the course of every other person's decision. Tonight I ask you, could you be that person for your crowd? Tonight we've been talking about how the crowd can influence us. And how the crowd can keep us from doing what we know is right and good. And how we need to be wary of the effect that crowd can have on us. How that pressure cooker can change our thinking. How we can be conformed to the world. How we can take that world and it can shape us. But you know, it can work both ways. You can change your crowd by you doing the right thing. It could change everyone else that follows you. Tonight, you may be outside of Christ. And you recognize that the world has said, this is what you have to do. But it's not what Jesus has told you you have to do. Maybe tonight you need to open your mind. Don't think with the world's thoughts, but think for yourself. Look at what he says that you need to do. Look at what he says you need to be. And in making a change in your life tonight, it can affect everyone else that follows you. The choice that you make to follow Christ can affect your children and their children. It can affect your spouse and her family or his family. It can affect your friends and your neighbors and everyone that you come in contact with, because there is a draw of the crowd. But we don't want to be conformed to the world, but to draw people to what is right and good. Tonight, you might need to make a change in your life. Maybe tonight it's time for you to set aside what the world has said you need to do to be saved and do what Jesus tells you you need to be saved. Maybe tonight you need to put Christ on in baptism. Maybe tonight as a Christian, you begin to notice that the pressure has been getting to you, that their voices have been winning you over, and things you know aren't pleasing to God. You've heard so many people say that now you thought, well, maybe it's okay. And maybe it's time that you need to make a change in your own life. Maybe there's a sin that you need help in overcoming. Maybe you need to make a decision to step apart from the crowd and show something different to the world. The decision you make tonight won't just affect you. It'll affect everyone you come in contact with. So make sure you're making the decision for the right reason and not just following the crowd. Tonight, if you need to respond, we want to offer you a chance right now while we sing this song of invitation.